Nick Beeching. He's also senior lecturer in clinical infectious diseases with the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Nick, thanks for being with us. Good morning. What have you made of the new measures that have been brought in over the past few days?
Good morning. Confusing, I think. I think everybody's finding it difficult to keep track of all these different changes and different rules in places next door to each other. And it makes it, I think it makes it very difficult for people to do what they need to do, really. Everybody's very fed up. And yet we know that if we don't take care of ourselves, there's going to be more trouble.
Mm.
And it's very frustrating, you know, here we are in Liverpool, Sefton, having slightly different rules in Lancashire.
Yeah, can I just pick up on that? Because gym owners and people who work in gyms and gym goers as well will be saying, well, hang on a minute, the gyms are, they're in Tier 3, but their gyms are open and our gyms aren't. And there was a lot of frustration and a lot of anger, but from an infectious disease point of view, can you see the logic or the reasoning behind that?
Very political question. It's very difficult to explain. And I think there's a balance between having locally tuned restrictions, if you like, and having a national standard. And I think I approve of bringing in the sort of tier one and tier two and tier three. At least everybody across the country will understand what each tier means or can get used to that. And I would prefer it, and I think many of my colleagues would prefer it, if we had that system from the start. And then it's important that local leaders have the ability to add extra things if required and have that local response. But I think when you have these differences, which are a little bit difficult to explain on a scientific basis between one place and another, I think that adds to huge frustration and makes people less likely to do what they need to do.
Yeah, I was going to pick up on that, actually, because, you know, the vast majority of people, they want to do the right thing. But if they're not sure what the right thing is, people will, you can go one way or the other. They'll say, well, I'm going to go to one extreme. I'm not going to come out. I'm going to wear a mask on top of my mask. Or there will be the other side of it, say, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here, so I'll just crack on and do nothing. And that's the danger.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I've been going to a local gym myself, so I share people's frustration. And the gym I was going to were fantastic. They were doing everything possible to keep people safe. But I think it's the other end of the scale that I really worry about. It's people that the small minority most of the time who are just not being sensible at all. And they're putting themselves at some risk, the younger people. It's not no risk, but it's really putting their parents and their grandparents at much greater risk.
Mm.
And my colleagues in the hospital are busy. And, you know, we're back to almost where we were earlier this year.
When it comes to the R rate, Nick, at the moment, where are we with that? I saw the latest estimate, somewhere between 1.2 and 1.7.
Yeah, it sort of hovers around exactly. It's never precise, but it's, let's say it's around 1.5. So in very simple terms, everybody that has an infection is infecting 1.5 more people. That's a very simple way of looking at it. And therefore, it's going to go on multiplying throughout our community. And we need to get that down below one by essentially wearing masks and being sensible and keeping as far apart from people as we can.
Mm. You mentioned your colleagues in the hospital before, and you said, I think you said, it's like it was at the start of this. We're not seeing the, thankfully at the moment, and one death is too many, of course it is, we're not seeing those rates at the moment, though, are we? Is that because we know a little bit more on how to treat this?
Yeah, there's a number of things. I mean, it is very busy in terms of numbers of beds, and there are people in intensive care. And sadly, people are dying. The national death rates are going up. And, you know, particularly sad for Joe Anderson, for example. His brother passed away last week, a high-profile person. But there are plenty of others as well, which is always very sad. I think there's a number of factors. Obviously, there are more younger people being infected, so there are less people with severe infections because most, but I have to keep emphasizing, but not all young people don't get severe illness. We are better at managing it, that's for sure. But you have to remember that the national death rates were up to around 150 last week on some days. And there are some models that suggest it could go much higher over the next few weeks, unless we get a grip on things nationally. So it's not just a local thing. I think nationally, many of us feel that we're going to move towards more lockdown.
Do you think that's inevitable, another national lockdown?
I can't see it going away. And many of the experts would feel that actually we ought to bite the bullet a bit earlier and just get it done, break the cycle of transmission and try and avoid what seems to be rather inevitable at the moment, which is all very depressing.
Yeah. I mean, the Prime Minister talked about this whack-a-mole strategy. However, at the moment, the moles are a lot bigger and there's more of them and you've still got the same size mallet. So that's where it becomes a problem.
Yes, and you know, compared to about 2 weeks ago, much larger parts of the country are under different levels of restriction now. And whatever jargon phrase to use it, the need for a sort of a short or moderately short, sharp shock all over the place may be better to bring things under control.
And just to finish with Nick, if I may, I read with a lot of interest over the weekend the possibility of a vaccine by early next year. Now, for me, early would be 1st of January, but I know that's not going to happen. So is it likely that we could see this by the time spring rolls around?
I think it's encouraging that there are several vaccine candidates coming through. As you say, early next year means something that's approved, known to be safe, perhaps by March, maybe a bit earlier. But in terms of rolling it out to large numbers of people, I don't think we're going to have the whole of the UK immunised by March, for example, and it's likely to take well into next year, even if we have something available. But we are all hopeful and optimistic, and I think we have to remain that way.
Well, we do, and it is difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, through the whole of this thing, we've got family, you've got family, our listeners, you know, we're all in the same boat, and we encourage and we try to stay positive and say, we'll get through it, we will get through it. But then when this extra big speed bump comes along, and it's difficult. But, you know, you work in this game. This is your job. This is what you do. We will get through this. It's just a matter of being patient and doing the right thing.
It is. And I think, we, as you say, we all have to work together on this and actually look after ourselves, but also look after our relatives and our friends who may be more at risk.
Nick, thanks for your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed. And do pass on our best to your colleagues who are all working really hard as well. Thank you. Appreciate your
all
time.
Right. Thank you for that.
There's Dr. Nick Beeching there from the School of Tropical Medicine. Nick works with infectious diseases, senior lecturer in clinical infectious diseases with the School of Tropical Medicine. Now, just turned quarter.